Special Sauce is brought to you by Soyve. Unlock the awesome with marinades like Very Very Teriyaki and Hoisin Garlic.
Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
All this stuff and horrible stuff going on, you know, like, instead of us arguing about it and finding out who's right or wrong, if we just open ourselves up to it and always err in the conscience of caring and giving and sharing, and like, you'll be amazed at what you're able to accomplish.
This week, we are excited to have with us visionary chef and food truck impresario Roy Choi. Roy first became known as the founder of the Koji Taco Trucks, which in many ways revolutionized street food in Los Angeles. He now owns and operates four restaurants in that city, including A-Frame, Sunny Spot, Chego, and Pot at the Line Hotel in Koreatown, which is ironic considering that being a hotel chef almost drove Roy out of the chefing business. Roy is also the author of perhaps the most mesmerizing chef memoir I know, L.A. Sun, which detailed his life as a first-generation Korean-American immigrant in Los Angeles. The book talks about how he found himself caught between his Korean roots and his contemporary American experience. Now Roy is once again breaking the chef mold by creating Local, a burger-centric, moderately priced, and gasp, healthy fast food concept, which he has developed with his fellow visionary chef, San Francisco's Daniel Patterson of Koi fame. Welcome to Special Sauce, Mr. Local Roy Choi.
Hey, Ed, that's the best introduction I've ever heard of Local, man.
I worked hard on it, man. We normally talk about, you know, your background, how you got into cooking, but your life is so interesting, it deserves a Special Sauce episode of its own. So we're just going to focus on Local because I have so many questions for you about that.
Yeah, we already did the L.A. Sun thing together, you and me. And yeah, I guess my life, it needs more of a Ken Burns treatment, a six-part series.
It's true. It's true. And people tell me, because, you know, you were a consultant on that Jon Favreau movie Chef, which was a very sweet Hollywood movie. Although it's good that you were the consultant, it was not the Roy Choi story.
No, it wasn't my story. It was the script that John wrote completely independently and creatively on his own. And, you know, life works that way sometimes. And then after looking at it, we realized how much it was similar to my life.
Right.
And so by me just getting linked into the project, it was, you know, it was very serendipitous and kind of, you know, meant to be type of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I hope it's not going to stop us from getting the Ken Burns treatment, the six-part series on Roy Choi.
No, anything for Serious Eats, always. Always.
So let's talk about Local, the concept and how it came about.
I think it's something that's been brewing, not only in Daniel, myself, but also as a country, you know, for a long time. And then it just takes a couple, like, tangible moments for those dots to connect sometimes, you know? And for this one was, if you go back to about 2012, I wrote a blog on my Riding Shotgun LA site, and it was just kind of like a frustration with everyone celebrating the 20-year anniversary of the LA riots. And everyone was just kind of patting each other on the back about how great the city had become and how much better we were as a society and all these things. And I was out there on the streets just feeding people, and I was like, no, man, you know, there's so many people still struggling. So it was just this, like, feeling within me that I just was really mad about. And I wrote this blog late into the night.
That's when you do all of your writing, if I remember.
Yeah, I do. And then I woke up the next morning, and it went viral. And I just talked about, like, all the inequities in life and just how things aren't fair and how there are a lot of people struggling and can't get access to food. And that led down the whole pipeline of things of just, like, going viral and people assuming things about me. And then it led to a speech in 2013 in Copenhagen at the Mad Food Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And the theme was guts. And I challenged myself to speak to my chef community and let them know how I felt about this, about hunger and about how we are almost the ones with the magic. You know, I really feel like us as the chefs, in that moment, I felt like we were the Merlins of this existence. And we held the magic, and we weren't sharing it with enough people. And all we had to do was start sharing and stop believing that we could only feed, you know, a small minority of people that could afford it. And so I challenged our chefs, the best chefs in the world, about 600 of them.
Right. Now, we should explain that the MAD conference is in Copenhagen, developed by one of the leading lights of the Scandinavian food scene. And it's a gathering of chefs from all over the world.
Yeah, it's like a G20 summit for chefs. It's a Comic-Con. It's a nerd fest, you know. It's a pilgrimage where all the best chefs go to just spend 3 days together and nerd out, you know, and share information and, you know, pass notes to each other and really try to understand what we're doing because we don't see each other. And so, you know, this was the moment, this was a Super Bowl where I walked in and I felt like I had to tell these chefs what was up, basically. And at the same time, Daniel had been going through his metamorphosis as well up in San Francisco, doing a lot of work in the Tenderloin with a lot of young people in the Tenderloin, teaching them how to cook in a nonprofit. And we met, and I gave the speech, and we never talked in Copenhagen, but we were almost connected in a weird way. I think he was affected by the speech. I had noticed all of his work randomly as I was leading up to Copenhagen. And a few months later after the conference, he called me. And he said, listen, man, I was really feeling your speech, and is it okay if I fly down to L.A. and talk to you about this idea? And that idea was bringing fast food to the inner city. And from there, him and I, we just blossomed the idea from there.
It's not just bringing fast food to the city. It's actually bringing healthy fast food, right? It's not just, let's make a chefy McDonald's.
No, but it is fast food, you know, and the reason why it's very important for it to be fast food, because we are rebuilding infrastructure. We are trying to invest and develop and care for and nurture and share with neighborhoods and beautiful family members and people that I know things that they've been deprived of, that we've abandoned as a society, that we've taken away. And so we have to start at a certain point, and that point is fast food, because that is what is being infiltrated within the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can't come too highbrow or too intellectual. It has to be at a price point that everyone can afford. It doesn't make sense to make something that is world-shattering, but then it's $15 a plate,
right?
You know? And so it was very important that the threshold had to be $1 to $4.
Right, so you have burgers on the menu. I'm looking at the local menu. I can have a cheeseburger with jack cheese, scallion relish, and what you call awesome sauce for $4.
Yeah, and that's everything. We bake the bread. The bread is a fermented koji bun. The meat, it comes from good ranchers. It's mixed with grains and seaweed and tofu.
Wow. That's pretty radical.
Yeah, and the sauce, the awesome sauce, you know, it has fermented chili paste and roasted tomatoes and garlic. You know what I mean? And the scallion relish is charred scallions with lime. You know, everything we make is from scratch.
Can we stop now? Could you just send me two burgers and we can continue this conversation tomorrow?
Yeah, for sure. No problem.
Wait. I need you to go through the ingredient list for the burger, because that's not the ingredient list in the burgers that I make or McDonald's makes.
Well, the burger patty is 70% meat.
Okay.
It's mostly ground chuck. We try to do grass-fed when the butcher and the farms can supply it. Otherwise, it comes from farms that and ranchers that we really respect, that we use in our own restaurants. And so we basically use it as a kind of like a co-op. We put the word out there. And all of the purveyors and relationships that we've built as chefs, they kind of like throw their their hat in the middle, and whoever can supply it at this price this week comes through with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 70% ground meat, and it's 30% grains. It has grains like barley, farro, quinoa. It also has seaweed and tofu and fish sauce, and that's all blended together into a paste. And then that paste is mixed in with the meat, and so you create an emulsion. And then we form the patty, and then within that patty, and then as you eat it, it has all of that umami in it, and then it has white soy in there too. And from that umami, you can't really tell that it's 30% grains, but your body can tell, even though your mind can't tell.
Fascinating.
Because as you eat it, it's good for you.
Right.
You know what I mean, it's delicious. It's delicious and good for you without having to be on a soapbox.
Right.
Telling you that it's good for you, you know? So that, we got that. And then the bun was designed by our friend Chad Robertson at Tartine.
Right. We want one of the great bakers in America.
Yeah. And our challenge, I mean, he makes the most amazing artisanal, crusty bread that you would all imagine coming out of an oven. And, you know, you hit with a hammer and it sounds like a bell throughout the universe, you know? But we asked him to make a squishy bun, you know, because that's fast food.
See, only and you so, could ask Chad Robertson. If I asked Chad Robertson to make a squishy bun, he wouldn't listen.
No, he wouldn't. But when Daniel myself asked, you know, that's what local is. You know, local is the highway. It's the highway of information and knowledge. You know, it's us at a point as chefs coming together and saying, you know what? It's time to share this information, you know, and it's time to use everything we've learned and do something with it, you know, other than feed 50 people a night.
Yeah, you know? And you talk about on the local website, you talk when you say by shopping at, or eating at local.com, you're not just buying stuff, you're joining our movement and contributing to our mission to feed goodness to the world. That's a pretty big mission.
Yeah, you know, but you got a dream, you know. Like a lot of what local is it's a dream, and we create the dream and we push it. We make it as fantastic and as unimaginable as possible. And then we take our waking selves and try to push ourselves towards it. So we create kind of these really out of reach slogans, you know, like buy a hoodie and we're going to change the world. You know, buy a hat and that money is going to go back to the neighborhood. And it's going to develop into a snowball, and it's going to change and, you know, provide prosperity and wealth within these neighborhoods, you know, and that's how we dream. And then from that dream, then we fill in the color, we fill in the space.
You're trying to convert a half-court shot and make it a layup.
Yes, that's a great example, yes. And we're on fire. Like some basketball players say, like, the basket looks like a swimming pool, you know. And so it's not that hard. It just takes commitment and compassion and caring and focus, you know. It takes all of your talents and your energies and your knowledge and your application towards doing something really, really good for people.
Yeah.
You know? And once you allow yourself to do that and you open yourself up, especially in these times now, you know, like all this stuff and horrible stuff going on, you know, like instead of us arguing about it and finding out who's right or wrong, if we just open ourselves up to it and always err in the conscience of caring and giving and sharing, and like you'll be amazed at what you're able to accomplish and some answers that you're able to find. And so that's really what we do. Like, we know we have a business that is very difficult to turn a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that we're taking all of this homemade food, made from scratch food, and selling it for $2 and $4. And also paying our employees above minimum wage, plus providing health care, plus giving free meals a day, and plus taking care of the community. It's a business model that we're, at this point, you know, we're searching for ways for it to profit.
Mm-hmm.
But we will find that profit. We will find that profit through volume. But right now, the focus, the first 2 years, is really building brand, building revenue, becoming smart, and so that it does become profitable, so that the businesses grow and they provide wealth within the community. And so really, we're a crowdfunded business. We started with crowdfunding, and so now it's like, what else can we do? We have great connections with artists, great connection with creatives and other chefs. So we create this store that has this model where if you buy it, it's not going to go back to the company. It's going to go back to fueling this movement. And we've always said we're a movement.
Yeah, and you talk about also on the site, you say it's for profit for the folks in our communities who use our commissary kitchens and other communal resources. It's for profit for the kids who get real fresh nutrition so they can strive in school. It's for profit for our staff who develop skills. It's for profit to spark other movements in our neighborhoods. So this is really not about feeding people burgers. This is really kind of about changing the world.
You know, it is. And some may laugh at us, some may roll their eyes, but we're doing it. That's all I can say. It's not rhetoric. You know?
Yeah.
You know, we're actually out there. And we're doing it. And when we say for profit, we're trying to redefine what profit means. You know, we have hundreds of communities throughout our country, man, you know, like, you know, have a lot of nonprofits helping them. And there's no jobs and there's no economy. And you have hundreds of thousands of young kids with nowhere to go. You know what I'm saying? And then all that's left is the streets. You know, and so what we're trying to do, especially, you know, in the projects and really down, like you're on the East Coast, you know, out in Newark will be our first East Coast spot.
Wow.
You know, like really, really get down to the streets, get down to the people, get down to the families and provide pathways for growth. Saying that, you know what, like, let's dream of this town, this street, this block, your home, your life, your kids, everyone, like, I want y'all to be millionaires, you know. I want y'all to be multimillionaires. I want the town to be flourishing.
Yeah. You want people to dream as big as you dream.
Yep. And then see that it is possible and then see how to get there. And it starts with a really simple, fun little cheeseburger.
You mentioned crowdsourcing. So I know because, yeah. By the way, I was one of the sources of the crowdsourcing. I have my local t-shirt, dude. Okay, so
thank you.
I was in. You set it up as a crowdsourced business to begin with, right?
Yeah, that was really important for us because we didn't know where we were going with it. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm not going to lie. We had no idea. So we didn't want
to. I'm not surprised.
We didn't want to put ourselves out there to investors or anything and have our vision be compromised in any way just because we weren't ready. So we felt like it was really important. Let's start with the people. Let's start with the people as our investors. Treat it as a creative project to where people who invest in us are investing in us and investing in our vision and our ideas and are coming along with us, knowing that we don't have everything figured out yet, you know. And I don't know. We didn't want to answer to anybody. And so it just felt right. And so we went out there and did it with Indiegogo, and it was amazing. You know, like the first half of it, it was going really slow, and like I couldn't figure out like why we weren't hitting, because everyone was really, really feeling the campaign, but the campaign wasn't growing. We were at like 12% of our goal, and we were over halfway through the campaign.
Whoa.
And I was getting really scared, to be honest. I was a little depressed because I was just like, you know, this can't fail, you know. It's like we were this close to maybe making this become a reality for a lot of people in our lives. And I kind of vented to a lot of my music friends, and especially one guy named Bamboo and his DJ Factric. And they introduced me to their guy, Brian, who helps out a lot of underground hip-hop artists with their Kickstarters. And so we connected, and he really, really became like my personal trainer. You know,
your personal crowdsourcing trainer.
Yeah, like there's a science to crowdfunding. You know, there's an honest science to it on how you really get your message out there and get through the clutter and the white noise and the spam, and how you become relevant and how you can connect out there in the digital space where, you know, it's just an ocean of things. You know, and he really became my personal trainer. It was like going to the gym every day.
And so he saved the campaign, man.
He was like my editor. He was like my editor, you know? and he saved the campaign.
Yeah.
And not only did he save the campaign, but together we reinvigorated it, and then we made up for lost time, and then we surpassed the goal, and then became the most successful food crowdfunder in the history of Indiegogo.
Wow. So how much money did you raise?
We raised, I don't even know, but I think it's like 140,000 around there.
Wow.
And in the scheme of like making a restaurant, that's not that much, but it was a lot of people coming together and believing in this mission. What it did was it paid for the intangibles. It paid for Daniel and I to have studio time. And I always say it's like it paid for us to make this album and to make the art. You know, it didn't pay for the building, and it didn't pay for the, you know, the stoves and all that stuff. You know, it didn't pay for the hardware.
But it paid for the R&D time.
Software. Yeah, it paid for the R&D time for us to develop recipes, for to pay artists to come up with the logo, to fly back and forth and do R&D. And so, you know, we would have never had that stuff, the content, without the Indiegogo campaign.
Wow. That's so cool.
They will be always the investors of what local is.
Can people still invest or support local, even if they can't get to one of the locations, and there are now two locations or one?
Yeah, we got two. We just opened Oakland five weeks ago. I think right at this point right now is the merch store.
Okay.
That would be the best way to help the mission. But we're thinking about reinvigorating another campaign. We're just trying to find a reason to. It wouldn't be to pad our pockets. We need to figure out what is chapter two of local.
Got it.
And why would we want to reach out? And, you know, that's just my style ever since Kogi. I don't like putting things out there unless I truly, you know, am passionately behind it. You know,
sure.
Like, I'm not going to bother you, Ed, or anyone, any of the followers of Kogi, unless I got something really great to offer you.
Right.
You know?
So people can go to local.com and buy...
It's welocal.com.
WeLocal. So spell that, Roy, just so everybody has it.
WeLocal.com. WeLocal.com.
Excellent. And you can get one of those cool white t-shirts that I got.
Yeah, man. We got all kinds of merch now. We got t-shirts. We got beanies. We got two different logos. We got hats. You know.
It's
all kinds. We got tumblers. Coffee tumblers, ice cold tumblers, everything.
So you've opened two of them in Oakland and Watts. Why those locations?
Well, Daniel's in the Bay Area. I'm in Los Angeles. So we felt like our first four stores have to be, you know, in the Bay and L.A. so that we can be, you know, intricately involved in everything, you know, because we're still a startup, you know what I mean? And I think what people don't realize is we're still kind of in our beta phase. We're only 6 months old, you know that? And like, we're still figuring stuff out. You know, like, even if you open a fine dining restaurant, you're like, you're still figuring stuff out in 6 months, you know? And we're still figuring things out, and we're still in the beta phase, and we're still testing recipes, and we're still changing things, you know? And so we have to stay involved. Our DNA is very important to the brand. And so... that's why they're in the Bay. So Oakland, it's a city based around revolutions and movements and you know, the people of Oakland, the culture, the hip-hop culture, everything. It just felt right for local. And then Watts is one of the most powerful communities in all of America. And I have a lot of connections to Watts, and it just felt right to open there.
Got it.
We're looking at doing the tenderloin in San Francisco next, which is a whole nother ball of wax and another part of our mission.
What about Brooklyn? And, Brooklyn, dude.
And then we're going to do another one in L.A., probably in the Crenshaw District, and then probably by end of next year, so a year and a half from now, we'll be able to expand. Because we need to build the framework, you know what I'm saying? Like, we need to, because like, when we open East Coast, I can't be out there every
day. So the prototype has to be finished.
It has to be, at least to a point to where we can trust it in someone else's hands, you know? Because we can't give them a half-built idea.
Yeah.
You know, we have to give them something that they can execute. And mm-hmm. And so when we're ready, which will hopefully be sometime in 2017, probably towards the latter end, we'll start expanding outward because we need to, man. There's so many jobs we can give. Like just Oakland and L.A., we're already providing, you know, over 100 jobs.
Wow.
To a lot of folks that either it's their first job or they're never going to be able to get a job because maybe their criminal record, maybe they can't read or write. You know what I mean? Or maybe just because of just a lot of things that they've been through in their life.
Mm-hmm.
See, our job application process is not about what you've done. It's about who you are.
Right.
You know, and so it's really important because we're providing these things that aren't being provided. And even though it's small, it can have a ripple effect.
Sure.
And so that's why we want to grow. So the first East Coast will be Newark. And we're looking at Detroit, South Chicago, West Atlanta, Brooklyn. I would love to do Brooklyn. So once we get to Newark, that'll give us the opportunity to go out. And we'll have flagship stores, too, because it's important for everyone to be able to touch this.
Yep.
You know? And so I'm looking at having one right in the middle of Soho. You know?
All right. I'm going to help you, Roy. I am personally going to help you open on the East Coast.
Thank you. We'll put it right next to your office, right there in Little Italy.
All right, man. So can you really compete with the big corporate fast food chains with their dollar menus? I look at your menu, and you do have dollar items, and you have $2 items. So maybe you can, but does that enter into your thinking?
All the time, of course. But then I also look in the mirror and take a few deep breaths and continue to remind ourselves that we're only 6 months old, you know. But that's definitely something that I look at, you know, and there are times where I get motivated and there are times where I get depressed, you know, like where I think we're doing good work. And then I look and I'm walking down the street and I look at a window at Burger King and it's, you know, 14 nuggets for $1.99.
Mm-hmm.
They have so much purchasing power and we're not at that level yet. We have to work off of goodwill and, you know, honest relationships and inspire purveyors and growers and suppliers to believe in this.
Yeah.
To take a look at it and say, you know what? Like, everything is not about profit. The other way we try to combat it is with science. You know, mm-hmm. that's really our biggest currency. It is Daniel and myself having us being able to look at something and say, all right, it has to be $2. Here's what we want to cook. And then figuring out a way to cook it profitable at $2.
Yeah.
And that's through slow cooking, drying, dehydrating, flavor compounds, layering, anything.
And I think, look, let's face it, you said sometimes you get excited, sometimes you get depressed. And that's what doing anything that's worthwhile involves, doesn't it? I'm sure you had those same emotions when you were doing Koji. You know, and now you have the added layer of direct social responsibility. So that makes it even harder, but it also makes it, I assume it just makes you more determined.
Thank you for those words. Koji was a little bit different, though. Koji was a phenomenon. Koji is a roller coaster, you know, and it was from the beginning, Koji was just this gusher of just like this psychedelic, amazing. Like,
right. You had a hit. You had a hit single that just spread across the city.
And that just wouldn't stop. You know? And my dilemma with that was more my own shyness of dealing with the fame and the exposure and the pressure and like, you know, just the phenomenon itself. And, you know, I just went through some stages of depression of just, I just wanted to get off the roller coaster, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like I wanted to get off. I didn't want to keep going upside down into loops, you know, because it wouldn't stop. And but I found my peace with it and, you know, grew Koji even more. And, you know, I'm very at peace with Koji, and I love it, you know. But local is different. Local is, because Koji started out so simply and naively. It was literally just slanging tacos on the street, and everything else came from that.
Right.
Local started with a mission itself.
Right.
The depression part of it comes more from are we going to be able to do this?
Right.
You know?
Just how much resistance there is.
It's scary. Yeah, you know, because we don't know everything yet, you know? I think about it. I think about the success of local and how wonderful it will be if it blossoms to a certain state. And I also think about, like, what if it doesn't work?
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't work, you know, there's nothing else coming up behind us right now.
Right.
That's going to fill in the void.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see another small little, you know, company or group going into the depths of South Chicago and Watts and Compton and providing 20, 30 jobs to the youth and the kids out there, you know, and the OGs, you know, and giving them the opportunity to be able to grow and provide for the families, you know what I mean? And then also to give them better food besides Pineapple Fanta,
sure.
2 liter Pineapple Fanta, you know what I mean? Like, I don't really see it coming yet. And so it's like, if local doesn't, if it doesn't continue, then...
Who's going to pick up the slack?
So then that's where it becomes very important for us to keep local healthy.
I think that's where you have to call upon your reserves that Koji gave you. You know,
yeah.
I mean, your emotional reserves, not the financial reserves, but just like, you look, I know when I started Serious Eats, everyone said, it's never been done before, you can't do this, who wants high quality content on the internet about food, you know, you have to talk about gossip, and I was like, that's not what I do. And when you're operating with a blank piece of paper, it's scary. It's also incredibly exciting. And you've probably figured out that you can experience the highest highs and the lowest lows in the same day.
Of course. It takes every part of you, every single day, every single moment, you know? And so, yeah, I don't know how to do it any other way. I wish I could create like a gossip thing, you know, like and just like fall out. But I, you know, like you write a gossip blog and I'll create like a frozen yogurt stand. You know?
All right, it's a deal. I like that, Roy. Well, I think what you're doing is amazing at local. I can't tell you how impressed I am that you even are attempting this, which has never been attempted before. I can't imagine the hurdles you're dealing with every day, but I also know what a huge heart you have and how generously spirited you are. And so I think local, between you and Daniel, it's in the right hands, and you guys are going to do it. And I just want to thank you for coming on Special Sauce to tell us about it, because it's really an amazing thing. And so thanks for so much for sharing your special sauce with us, Roy. Have a taco at one of the many Koji trucks in L.A. Go to one of his restaurants. Read L.A. Sun. And by all means, check out local if you find yourself in Watts or Oakland. So long, Roy. Thanks a lot.
Oh, man. It's always a pleasure, Ed. I'll see you soon.
All right, man. So long, Serious Eaters. We'll see you next time.